Technorama episode 370. Is that leet speak for something? For February 27th, 2013. Mushroom? What mushroom?
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, I just read this poem about a man from Nantucket. Have you seen him?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for February 27th, 2013. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and that man adjusting his video colors or something is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good. I'm actually curious what you're wearing. You know, it's Oscar night.
What am I wearing? Blue striped shirt, dress shirt with a collar from JCPenney.
Kmart.
Yeah. We're all about the fashion on Technorama, aren't we? Yeah.
I have a nice selection from Kohl's of a long sleeve jersey with.
You look like you're wearing one of Roy's t-shirts from the IT crowd. What?
There's nothing on it, actually.
Oh, okay. It doesn't say like RTFM or something. It looks like it should. It's just that color.
No, I should read WTF.
You know, those are the guys that are on my phone, right? They have.
Oh, yeah.
Craig commented on Technorama. Okay. On my lock screen. Did you see that Family Crest thing that I posted a while back?
No, I didn't see that. Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It's got the new emergency number. 01189998819991197253.
Three.
It's easier if you remember the song. I can't carry a tune in a bucket on that one. So no. Let us proceed with the rest of this show. We try to keep our singing at a minimum.
Coming yes, up very
in
much so.
This episode, we have scalpel, forceps, clamp. Look, this isn't brain surgery. It's Technorama. None of that and more coming up right after this.
Turn your head and cough.
I know where everybody would say, dang a gum, you're a geek.
How to cook an egg with your cell phone. You know, if somebody just made a cell phone like that, I'd buy it.
Or make eggs.
Does it take pictures and do all this other nonsense? I've got an MP3 player.
I've got my iPod video. I'm happy with that. I'm just not a converged device guy.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, it's got to make sense.
Damn, beat it down. Beat it.
Do you know what a Tesla coil is, Craig?
Say, stick your tongue to this.
Oh, we lost Craig.
Hey, this is Alan Ruck, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig, and they're no damn good.
Hey, we want to remind you that every week we do the show live on Google Plus Hangout, Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern Time. We'd love to see you there. And
wait.
Yes?
Describe live.
Live, as you and I are doing this live, and then we edit it and record it and put it in podcast form to release it through iTunes or whatever.
So
on Wednesday.
We're one third live.
What do you mean one third live?
For
how can you be one third
we...
live? That's like being mostly dead.
Because
or
we record
pregnant.
The show live, but then the rest of it's, you know, post. So...
Well, if
really
you want to hear
anymore.
All this chatter and banter before it gets edited... Join us Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern Time. You can go to Google Plus. You can go to YouTube channel. You can go to our website at chuckchat.com/webcam. We make it oh so easy for you and join the chat room. And we have this chat room here with some names we have not seen in quite some time, including Bookaroo, Captain Rootbeer. Well, I've seen my name on there every week as well as your name. We have Ed. Welcome, Ed. Gru, who's our dungeon master. Webmaster, IRC master. What do you call them? What do you call it? An IRC chat room operator, channel operator.
Yeah, sysop. Like.
Yeah, no, that's an old BBS term.
Same difference.
Mad Marv, Step K, Tim Elliott, and ZML2008 are all there. We'd love to see you hanging out with us, contributing to the show as it goes on the air live, and having a good time.
I hope ZML2008 is actually alive and well. They just passed out at the keyboard about 3 years ago.
5 years ago now.
Yeah,
I hope that's true. Maybe someday
it's probably one of those stories where there's a server embedded in a wall somewhere. It got, you know, closed up and the cable, nobody knows it's there. And he's actually logged into our chat room.
Oops.
Bring the server, but where's it at?
We have a birthday calendar. Also, we encourage you to go over there to chuckchat.com/wiki. Put your name on the birthday calendar. We give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. February 29th, which... there isn't one this year, but we'll wish Paul Dove, a.k.a. Elmer of Malmesbury, UK. I hope I said any of that right. Well, I got the Paul Dove right.
So he gets to skip it this year.
That's right. He's only like 4 years old.
4 years old.
Happy birthday to him. And if it's your birthday, sometime between, what is it, the 27th and March 5th, we wish you a happy birthday. All the geeky happiness to you. May you have LED candles.
So he's probably walked the earth for like 36 years, but he can't buy a beer in the store.
Right. I'm sorry, sir. God. You were born on February 29th. You can't buy anything until you're like 72.
Poor guy.
I'm only 9 in dog years.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll figure it out sooner or later.
Bad news, nobody.
We do have some bad news starting out the news. Turns out that a woman died. She was shot by her oven. Well, it first sounds comical, you know, that you see stories like this. A Florida woman was shot by an oven. Gives a whole new meaning to the word shooting range.
Oh, boy. These are the jokes, people.
Alaya Walker just wanted some waffles. As all good stories start out. So, the 18-year-old Florida resident who was visiting a friend in St. Petersburg, 25-year-old J.J. Sandy, turned on his oven to preheat. Unfortunately, she failed to check that the oven cavity was clear. It wasn't. Sandy had actually stashed a spare clip from his .45-caliber Glock. And the rest, you know what happens. As the Mythbusters have told you, when you heat up the oven, the bullets will go off, and it sprayed Walker's legs with casing fragments.
Oh my gosh.
These rounds will discharge at temperatures as low as 280 degrees Fahrenheit. But luckily, there were only 4 remaining in the 13-round clip when it went off. Walker was admitted
to a local hospital
with very minor injuries, and Sandy was not charged with anything. As he possessed a proper concealed weapons permit, the oven, unfortunately, is not expected to survive.
Why? Why would somebody store a clip in there?
I don't know. That's just an odd place to store your ammunition, isn't it?
It's like, here.
Have you been to bachelor pads before, an apartment or something? Things are in the strangest places.
But I've never seen a clip in the oven.
That's true.
I mean, come on.
Now, here's the question to you, Craig. Do you check that the oven is empty before you preheat it?
No, sir, I do not. Well,
Neither do I.
Not necessarily empty, but sometimes I'll look in there and see where the rack's at before it gets hot, you know? But
that's true.
Sometimes. I mean,
once in a while, I look in there and go, how clean is it? Does it need a self-cleaning or not?
You know? Yeah.
Because, you know, if cheese dripped off the pizza, you don't want, you know, the next thing that goes in there, the fresh baked bread, to smell like burnt pizza. So
I do.
Nasty lava charcoal smell. Ugh.
Yeah.
No. That's about terrible, the only time, man, I check it. But
yeah.
No, never for bullets.
Hey, I did see this one thing. Speaking of guns and stuff, it was kind of neat. It was, what is it called? A tactical wall? It was like, I saw a link somewhere, and it looks like a full-on mirror on your wall. but the wooden frame around the mirror.
Yes.
It slides and part of the frame remains, you know, so it kind of separates, but the glass, the mirror part slides away. And then right behind it is a cabinet where you have your guns at.
Well, that's interesting. Sounds very concealed.
Yeah, exactly. You know, next time you're at your house and can't get into the panic room, you know, and got a home invasion
the
going on.
The cave.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't get Sebastian Boxhead to come back so you can hit the button.
And, all right, we'll go on.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. I thought it looked pretty cool. Kind of like one of those things that you know, those websites where they have the concealed, staircases, you know, you can,
yeah,
like
yeah.
A hidden room.
And Morgan Freeman has the day off.
Morgan Freeman,
Batcave, you know.
Oh,
never mind.
Duh.
All right. Speaking of movie stars, well, this is almost a movie star. Neil deGrasse Tyson is a rock star. A couple weeks ago, we told you that he calculated the weight of Thor's hammer to be 300 billion elephants, which we mentioned was going to now be called One Tyson. Okay, I made that up. You can see how well that caught on.
Yeah.
Well, another researcher, materials scientist Suveen Matadu, or as close as I can get to that, explains just why Tyson
I was bad with the names.
Is wrong. Oh, come on. Mathaudhu. Matadu? Okay, that sounds like something you don't want to step in.
Yeah. Oh, Matadu. I just sounded like Jar Jar Binks there, didn't I?
Maybe he was chain smoking. On the North Carolina State's news blog, Matt Shipman has a story, quote, "The critical mistake Tyson makes is thinking that Mjolnir," as I'm told by the chat room is a better way of saying it than what I was doing.
Google Translate told us that too.
Okay. "Was forged of the core of a dying star when it was actually forged in the core of a dying star." Huge difference there, says Suveen Matadu, a program manager at the Material Science Division of the U.S. Army Research Office, your tax dollars hard at work, adjunct materials science professor at NC State, and diehard comics enthusiast. Quote, "It's well documented that the hammer is made out of Uru." Aren't they the fighting Uruk-hai of Lord of the Rings?
Sure.
"A fictional metal from Thor's native realm of Asgard, not to be confused with Isengard." That's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And
that is for
a seen fact. A little bit of crossover here. And Matadu can cite documentary sources to back him up. Documentary sources. That there was a show on the History Channel.
Yeah, talking about Thor's hammer.
For example, Marvel, which publishes the Thor's comics, issued Thor's hammer trading card in 1991 that states Mjolnir is made of Uru and weighs precisely 42.3 pounds. That's lighter than a herd of 300 billion mice, much less a herd of 300 billion elephants. But it raises a different science question. Huh, do read on. Using the dimensions and weight of Marvel's trading card, Matadu estimates the density of Mjolnir is about 2.13 grams per cubic centimeter. That makes it even lighter than aluminium.
Aluminium,
which has a density of 2.71, excuse me, don't want to get feedback on the 2.71 gram per cubic centimeter. So what could possibly be that light and strong? Matadu has a theory. Perhaps Uru is the holy grail of high pressure physics, a form of metallic hydrogen, a transparent aluminum. Matadu says, we are really crossing genres with this one story.
Oh, I agree.
"Some predictions of the density of metallic hydrogen fall into this range. It requires extreme conditions to form and could be a tremendous energy source. It's thought to be present at the core of planets such as Jupiter," since we're going with Mjolnir.
Jupiter,
"and at the core of suns, which are stars after all." Okay. Well, that was not a collapsed star, but Neil, you have been schooled. Hacks and strange stories.
I was going to say, by the way, it makes sense if you take this metal and forge it inside a star, because then you have the gravity going pulling it, making it really dense. Is that what I said?
If it had the gravity and made it all dense, then it would be just a teeny little hammer.
Yeah. Well, if you had this much metal,
then it wouldn't be 42.3 pounds.
That's true.
Speaking of things made in strange places, we have an article about an Amish trade show. Yes, an Amish tech trade show.
So they're upgrading to metal nails now.
And wooden rakes.
They're using box springs.
No, honestly, because our kitchen table was made at an Amish furniture store.
Hey, well, actually, in all fairness, not all Amish are traditional with the tech anymore.
With that evil electricity thing?
Yeah, some of them aren't. I don't think, you know, their lifestyles and whatnot are traditional, but not some of
the tools they use are adapted. This is the part I didn't know. The Buckeye Tool Expo in Dalton, Ohio is held in a massive hall filled with bearded men in black hats and women in white bonnets. A few horses and buggies are tied up outside. The Amish have chosen to forego many of the delights of the modern world, but they still need to drill sand and cut wood. This trade expo shows off all the loopholes that let the Amish get their hands on power tools. One table has the kind of loud candy color machines you might drool over at Home Depot. Oh, she put a ding in there or ask for sponsorship. But instead of running off electricity, which many Amish people don't use, the tools are powered by compressed air. So that leads me to wonder, where do they get the compressed air? What's the compressor running off of? Gas?
A horse.
Okay. Quote, it's almost unlimited. The tools you can convert to air, unquote. The guy behind the counter tells me. Drills, impact wrenches, saws, table saws. There are more than 100 vendors at the show, all selling some Amish twist on technology. The Amish were traditionally farmers, but in recent years, more young Amish men have started working in trades like making furniture and cabinets. And my kitchen table. And the kind of work where a power tool can bring in a lot more money. But the more technology the Amish adopt, the more technology they need. It's like a drug.
Yeah. Once you start, man, the first one's free.
I just need a screwdriver, man. I just need a screwdriver. So, for instance, as some of the Amish built bigger workshops and factories, they found out that gas lamps just weren't working. So, Elva Otto, an Amish man. Elva. That's an interesting name.
Sounds like a female body part.
Careful. Launched a company called Daystar to sell industrial skylights, several reflective tubes that funnel sunlight from the roof down into the workshop. It's a way to get more light without using that evil electricity. Do you ever watch Dexter's Laboratory?
Yes.
And Dexter gets sent to that Amish farm and he made a light out of potato and it glowed an evil glow.
I didn't remember that. Yeah, I think I do. Wait. Yeah, no. I don't know if I remember that one or not.
Most people can take something and plug it into a wall, Otto says. We can't use electricity for this, so then we get creative and figure out how to make something work.
Well, you're right. I want to know how they make the compressed air.
Probably with gas or kerosene. That's not illegal.
You know, they got a pump.
They got a cow walking on a treadmill.
Eat more chicken. You know,
there's a show on National Geographic called Amish Mafia, which I thought would be interesting just to watch once. I haven't seen it yet.
Why is he not? He must have shaved his beard off. Let's get him.
Let's get his belt sander.
Actually, you know what? I'm kind of intrigued about power tools with compressed air. I know I've seen impact tools, you know, where you're doing a drill type thing.
Yeah, if you go into a lot of these mechanics shops, they use compressed air for the lug nuts and the impact wrenches and all kinds of things. I've taken vehicles apart with compressed air.
I'm curious how well that works for saws.
Like circular saws and table saws and things?
Well, yeah, like that circular saw he's got sitting right there, like that miter, whatever you want to call it.
I'll bet if you had the right gears and ratios and things, you could get some serious torque out of those things.
Yeah, well, you know, my dad was just telling me about, my grandfather was a preacher, and in his church, one of his my parishioners, he had a small shack, and he had a generator that was making electricity for his place from the stream, which is, or it was like a pond with a roller, with a spillover rather, and he was getting power off of that. And I was like, he had enough. I mean, this is a long time ago, so I was like, you would get enough electricity to actually power a house. I mean, I guess it wouldn't have all the electrical needs that you wouldn't have nowadays, but Dad's like, yeah, sure. You gear it right, you can do it. You know?
Yep.
So, and the guy, he said the guy had a thing where he could use a throw switch and actually get on the grid if he wanted to, but he was trying to be more as self-sufficient as he could.
They may be using wind power. They may be using hydroelectric. You know, there's
a windmill. There's a windmill actually.
Right. That would be the Dutch.
But I'm curious to see it. I bet you can see a demo of that on YouTube somewhere.
That would. We'll do an interview. Oh yeah. Wait. We'd have to use. How could we record that?
We'd have to go there. We can use technology. They can't.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness you cleared that up.
Why not?
In another Hacks and Strange Story, we have a story about a woman who was informed of her son's death over Facebook.
This Ooh. Is wrong.
On January 24th, Ricky Lamb was hit by a car and killed. Poor guy. His body sat in the morgue until Valentine's Day, though. Ah. Because the incompetent local police only contacted the family over Facebook. It took over a month for Lamb's mother to find the message. Yeah, not everybody actually logs into Facebook every 5 minutes. Like
you got
some people
email.
Do.
Your son's dead.
Post it to the wall so everybody else knows.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports the ordeal of Anna Lamb Creasy, who had no idea what had become of her son. Apparently, the authorities couldn't figure out how to find a woman who was desperately looking for her son. So they opted to send her a message over Facebook. Because Creasy isn't friends with the cops on Facebook, the message was filtered to the often ignored other folder.
Oh, boy.
Why didn't Creasy pay attention to the message? Because it looked like spam. The message was sent by an account under the name Misty, with the photo of the rapper T.I. as a profile shot. What are these cops doing?
What kind of detective works there?
No doubt.
Look, my here's my thing. She said she was desperately looking for her son, right?
Yeah.
Would you call the police station?
Yeah, and file a report?
That'd be like the first top two things you'd want to do.
Yes.
So, obviously, either she wasn't making herself, known that she was looking for her son, or they got some bad detectives there at the police
station. Sounds like just something gone completely wrong.
There was some miscommunication here.
So here's the bright official. So an official police communication was sent from a social media account using the name of a porn bot and the photo of a convicted felon. How could Creasy have possibly ignored the message? It's bad enough to learn that your son is dead. The police could at the very least, do their jobs by finding the next of kin. Or, if they were going to be lazy, they could at least send the message from an official account. Or better yet, they could do their jobs and not communicate a tragedy in the coldest way possible. That gets a serious dislike button from me.
No kid. Well, you know, obviously they found her easy enough on Facebook, for crying out loud.
Ed in the chat room. Ed's asking you here, Craig, call which police station? It's in Atlanta. There's a lot of them.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Well, I don't know. That's a good point. Yeah. Still, she was desperately looking. You'd think you'd raise a flag. I don't know.
Wouldn't they share missing persons reports, though?
I would hope so.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I know it's easy to kind of not make fun of the
criticize
death.
Criticize others?
Yeah, that is pretty easy. Yeah,
we can do that.
Yeah, we have done it.
In our Remember When segment, we found an article trying to remember what the term Twitter meant before it actually meant a social media site. Oh, back in the 1700s, the definition of Twitter was one who twits. dial, a talebearer. In 1854, this sentence was used. Don't tell him anything. He's a Twitter.
Hey, and that oddly works today.
A condition of twittering or tremulous excitement from eager, desire, fear, etc. A state of agitation, a flutter, a tremble. Now chiefly dial. 1869. She was in a twitter, partly of expectation and partly of fear. Ooh. Well, I kind of like T's book, All a Twitter, right?
Yeah, sure. That's exactly right.
It also meant a suppressed laugh, a titter, a fit of laughter. 1736. He is in a mighty twitter.
And that one also works today.
Let's try this last one.
He's a mighty twitter.
An act or the action of twittering. As a bird, light, tremulous chirping. Also a sound resembling this. 1871. A mere swallow twitter of inarticulate jargon. That sentence was kind of inarticulate jargon.
It sounds like something from Monty Python, actually.
There's also a definition of pin. Now we think of pin as, what, Pinterest? Poking someone? I don't know. Pin, on the other hand, as explained by John Camden Houghton's 1874, the slang dictionary meant something completely different, at least as slang. To put in the pin, to refrain from drinking. Oh, well, we don't have our pins in tonight.
That's right.
From the ancient peg tankard, which was furnished with a row of pins or pegs to regulate the amount which each person was to drink. Drunken people are often requested to, quote, put in the pin, unquote, for some remote connection between the unsteadiness and that of a carriage wheel which has lost its linchpin. Hey, don't poke me in the eye in the camera.
I'm pinning you.
The popular cry, put in the pin, can have no connection with the drinking pin or peg now. I've never heard that phrase before. Whatever it may have originally have had, a merry pin, a roisterer.
I think maybe I would have used the word Twitter besides when Twitter came around. Maybe once in my life. Yeah. How about you? Could you imagine yourself using that word ever?
Things are all a Twitter? No. No, not really. It just wasn't a popular term.
Yeah. Not until what? Was it 2006, 7, whenever Twitter came around?
Right.
Oh, well.
All right, in the Media Corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
Hey, by the way, it was 2006.
The Daily Dot tells us that it's been more than 30 months since New York City microengineer Fred Benenson put the last smiley face on his epic new media novel, Emoji Dick. That's actually a version of Moby Dick. Not
speaking of body parts.
Right. Don't go all dirty mind on me here. But the hits keep coming for this Kickstarter-funded remake of Moby Dick, which refashions Herman Melville's 212,000-plus words into emojis, which I am happy to say I recently just listened to that audiobook once again. Moby Dick.
Emoji?
Emoji Dick probably wouldn't have been very fun. So in English, it's Call Me Ishmael is how the book starts out. In emoji, it's phone face sailboat whale fingers. I can't read emojis this way. I'm sorry. I got like call and the rest is just scrap. I don't know what it means. But it would be interesting to compare side by side or hear the audiobook of this.
So you have to kind of figure out by the emoticons what it's.
I don't know what you do with this, really.
Huh.
Yeah, huh. Is right.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Fascinating nonetheless. You can buy this thing online. It is currently available at emojidick.com for the soft cover, black and white, for $40, or the hardcover color version for just $200 US. And
200.
The little whale is highly pixelated on the website at emojidick.com.
Yeah, no kidding.
What, just think, it better come signed.
That's funny. Well, for $200, he better hand deliver it.
I think he should have done his whole bloody website with these emoji dick things. That would have been fun.
Did you go look at the website?
Yes, I did. It has Call Me Ishmael in emoji. Phone, see, face, sailboat, whale.
See, wait a minute. So you got the phone for call.
Right.
Okay, I kind of get that one.
Yeah.
Then there's the little dude that looks nothing like me. So how would you say me?
Hold on. I am going to go look up Moby Dick. Call Me Ishmael. Let's see what Wikipedia says about this. Call me... Moby Dick begins with the line, "Call me Ishmael," according to the American Book Reviews. No, I want more than just the opening line. Wait, I have it here. On my Kindle app. No doubt. Let's see. Books? Give me a second. Kindle? I will tell you. Moby Dick, the white whale. Whoops, opened the wrong document. That's Evernote.
I hate it when I click on the wrong thing.
No, let's go to the beginning of the book. Book. Beginning. Call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely, having little or no money in my purse and nothing particular to interest me on shore, I thought I would sail about a little and see the watery part of the world. Did you get that?
No, not from these emoticons.
Me neither. I'm not spending $200 on this book. I'm sorry.
It smells like a fail to me.
Hey, there's a fail whale on there, I suppose. Get the little Twitter birds to haul the whale up.
You know, whenever I think of emoticons, I think of like smileys or a little...
Exactly. The thumbs up or the beer stein or something. Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe mostly
some of the
smileys.
Some of the more creative and artistic ones. Yes, sure. But
I might have replaced the occasional, expression or something with a smiley or sad face or I don't know. Do they have a peg leg guy for Ahab?
He might be made one might up. I don't know.
Might be fun to thumb through. There's an entire chapter on the ropes of the ship, right? How do you do that in pictures? It's just going to be ropes, more other ropes, lines and knots, more other lines and knots. I don't know. Let's move on.
Yes,
we have a story,
please,
about the DeLorean. The actual DeLorean time machine from Back to the Future has been restored, finally, at Universal Studios. After more than a year of development, the original DeLorean time machine from Back to the Future has been fully restored and is now on display at Universal Studios in Hollywood. Oh, I was hoping it was in Orlando because I'm going there soon. This week's announcement marks the culmination of the Time Machine Restoration Project, which has been closely tracking the Restoration Project on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Time Machine Restoration. A so-called Hero A car is actually one of three models used during filming. Oh, there was more than one.
Yes, well, the Dukes of Hazzard had more than one.
And was used production. Yeah, because they kept bombing out the frame every jump they took.
Yeah.
And was used predominantly for shots with the actors themselves. Models B and C were used for stunts and close interior shots, respectively. The restored car's front flux bands have been replaced, but its caretakers say they were able to use mostly original materials since the DeLorean was used only for display rather than actual driving. When you're building a replica, you can decide how forgiving you want to be, project leader Joe Walser told BTTF.com. But to do it right, to truly nail it, to hold every piece to the highest level of accuracy achievable, well, that's the real trick. And it took the best team in the world and an incredible amount of time, not to mention money, and the effort to pull it off. It simply had to be what it was, a labor of love. So that's cool. I want to see that. How about you?
It is pretty cool. I love it. I think it looks great. I'd love to go see it.
It's beautiful. I mean, that would be hard. If you had a DeLorean, that would be really hard to put the right parts in the right places to make it look just right.
I know. Well, I don't know how. There's it's like R2 builder groups. They have groups that.
Yeah,
that
that's
this.
True. Yep.
So. I'm sure it's been planned out a good bit. Yeah, I'm sure it's been planned out a good bit, but still. Yeah, it sure can't be the easiest thing in the world. But I saw a YouTube video. It was like a Back to the Future, not spoof, but you know, where they repurposed the story a little bit. The guy was going back in time to see events happen in this story. So they get in the car, and you hear the guy doing his Doc Brown imitation. He's like, "Hey, Marty, let me show you how it works." He sits down. These are the time circuits, and he's pointing to the dash, and they've got an iPad taped to the dash, and you can see it looks like the control panel. Then he goes, "And this is what makes it possible." And he leans back, and they got another iPod with the flux capacitor fluxing. At first, I went, "Wow, that looks pretty good."
I'm off to look.
Yeah,
if there's an app for the flux capacitor on my iPad.
Well, yeah, because at first I went, "Wow, that looks pretty good." Oh, I see what they did there. That's what I want. You know. Hey, it worked. You know.
All right, we have a couple of stories left in the Geek Library, and then we're going to get out of here. First one just screams. This almost could have gone in the Remember When, but it screams Technorama when you read the headline. Are you in danger of spontaneously combusting?
I hope not.
The risk factors, according to a 1799 physician. Modern scientists are still investigating what might be behind reports of alleged spontaneous human combustion. But by the end of the 18th century, reports of humans suddenly going up in flames were pervasive enough that physicians compiled supposed risk factors for the phenomenon. This kind of sounds like these heart disease things.
Mm, yeah.
History magazine Latham's Quarterly offers this, quote, "risk of risk factors," unquote, collected by physician Pierre Lair, I think, of 1799. 1. Victims were older, usually over 60. 2. Victims were overweight. 3. So there's a lot of Americans that could blow up right now. Yeah. 3. Victims led inactive lives.
Yep, more Americans.
Still sounding like a lot of Americans. 4. Victims were alcoholics. Yep. 5. Women were more prone to spontaneously combust than men.
Finally.
6. I mean, at the scene, there was often an external flame, such as a candle or fireplace. Yes.
So the women were more prone to spontaneously combust than men because, what, they were hot? yeah, I'm here all week.
7. Combustion was extremely rapid. Although I think the Mythbusters proved that it's not. It's a smoldering thing. It's just nobody checks on them for a while. 8. The flames were difficult to extinguish. 9. The flames produced a strong empyromatic odor. I think
close enough. Pyromatic.
Okay. 10. The surrounding room was coated with a thick, yellow, greasy film.
Ew.
Yummy.
Is it kind of like when you barbecue some pork?
I was going to say, or you go to a gyro restaurant.
Get some shawarma.
11. The fire usually consumed the trunk of the body, but left the head and extremities intact. And finally, accidents occur during fair weather and more often in the winter than in summer. The factor of the alcoholism was particularly significant, especially for members of the temperance movement. In the 18th century, there were anecdotal reports of women who allegedly died as a result of spontaneous combustion, who were known to be heavy drinkers. And in the 19th century, it wasn't uncommon to fear that the perennially soused might meet a fiery end. Ooh.
Sounds like a story made up to kind of scare people not to drink.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
And keep their external flames at bay. Yeah. And lead active lives and don't be overweight. Hey, we could put this up at, you know, like the local Gold's Gym.
Working out can actually push you into spontaneously combusting.
Decrease your risk of spontaneous.
Go home now. Poor people.
Yeah. Finally, as if you didn't know, what was it, that article we did a few weeks ago that pi has been calculated up to trillion digits and takes, years to recite.
I'm still not clear on why that's important, but even though I like math. But
they use it to show computing power and the precision and all that good stuff.
How right? do you know? I mean, precision. You could fake that, man.
Well, the question is, how precise do we actually need it? And the answer is 39 digits. That's all. That includes the three. So the 3.38 digits.
Okay.
Okay. Pi is famously calculated to trillions of digits, but how many of them do you really, really need? This video demonstrates, there's a video on here if you follow the show notes, that actually just 39 will do. Taking pi to 39 digits allows you to measure the circumference of the observable universe to a width within within the width of a single hydrogen atom.
Wow. Right?
That's a pretty small error of margin of error.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Sure, you could use more. Yeah. But it's not really.
But if you
worth
go to 42 characters,
characters.
I'm thinking of Craig's
dealing
screen
with like string variables or something.
Yeah, characters. Well, no, I'm thinking of getting the length of the pi. So 30. Never mind.
39 is all we need. Although 42 is a better number in my opinion because it's
and
the
I bet
answer.
Most people only know. Two digits.
Now, they said the observable universe, which I think is interesting, right? Because we can observe back to, what, 13?
That's just to cover, that's a CYA statement right there.
Okay, 13.8 billion years, light years, right?
Look, that's a scientific CYA statement, because what you don't know, you don't know. So okay. If he's wrong, he can just say, hey, it's not part of the known universe.
Well, you add a couple more digits and you're good. Steve in the chat room says, I feel sorry for all those people who memorize hundreds of digits for quote unquote fun. I've got it to like 8 and it hasn't let me down yet. 8 past the decimal, right? 3.1415. 3.1415926 5, I think.
So you can calculate the known universe to the size of an asteroid.
Yeah, I'm plus or minus a few light years. Who cares?
Yeah, you need to work on that, man.
Go out there and prove me wrong. I've got like the size of the Earth to the width of a hydrogen atom. How's that?
Okay, that'll work.
I don't get much beyond Earth. You know, when's the last time you've been off Earth?
No comment.
Exactly.
I was told not to talk about it. Hey, but hey, speaking of which, I know it's the end of the show, but I wanted to say I watched that movie Seeking a Friend from the End of the World, End of the Earth.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? You're not familiar with that movie?
No.
All right, so the premise is, there's a meteor coming to Earth, and everybody's got like 21 days before it's all over. So, it's right off the bat, Steve Carroll, however you say his name, and his wife are sitting in the car hearing the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that the shuttle they sent to do something about it blew up. So it has failed. The mission's failed. So everybody had 21 days. And his wife just gets out of the car and runs. Leaves. So he's kind of left alone. And it's a good story. But it got me thinking about that. Kind of like in the same way, you remember, my mind's blank. What's the name of the movie that was in the 80s about, The Day After? Remember The Day After?
Not off the top of my
head,
The
Nuclear Strike movie? From the 80s?
Nope.
Not Day After. Was that right?
Red Dawn?
Not Red Dawn. Anyway, my point is, it's one of those things, you know that there's the meteor's coming. What would you do if you were on that particular Earth and it was getting ready to get smashed with a big, everything was going to die? What would you
Armageddon?
Do in the last? Yeah, what would you do in the last 3 weeks of your life?
I'll let you know when the time comes.
All right, but right now the podcast schedule is still on.
Well, that's debatable because there are some business trips coming up, but I'll let you know when they happen.
Yeah, but no meteors.
No meteors. Yeah. The only thing that'll stop this show is a real life every once in a while. When the customer wants me there Monday morning and I got to fly out Sunday.
Yeah, the day after. That was it. I'm gonna throw this out here real quick. The day after was, it was in 1983. It aired and it was about a nuclear strike and, you know, what happens afterwards. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, it was shown to Mikhail Gorbachev and it was actually the catalyst for us to do a lot of the nuclear drawdowns.
Really?
Yes. You don't remember that?
Nope.
You need to go do some Googling.
Well, more. I remember the arms treaties and the reductions and things, but I don't remember the movie.
This is where this some of this stemmed from. So, anyway. There you go.
All right. That takes us to the end of the show. Thank you for the trip down memory lane and the scenario. We appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call listener line at 206-222-2428. That's 206-222-CHAT. Makes it easy to remember. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you very much for everybody who's been showing the love on the Facebook page. More likes every day. We love to see that. And people clicking on the likes and sharing, and it's just a whole lot of fun over there. And you can contribute to the Technorama page if you find something weird and bizarre and think we'd like it. Definitely throw it up there. We've
had some people that have had better success than we have, so knock yourselves out.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
So he puts a picture up there and it's got like all kinds of traffic. Like, no, I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
Special thanks to Mad Marv for his contributions to the blog and all the great blog content that he puts up there. And everyone who sent us links during the week, really thank that. And those who sent us feedback on the email. This is where Craig does his little Technorama dance.
Email.
And if you're not seeing that on the Hangout, you can join us there every Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern time. We'd love to see you there. Or go find us on the YouTube page, youtube.com/user/technoramapodcast. We'll see you there. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with a whole bunch of great podcasts over at farpointmedia.com. Go check them out. You'll find something you like. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. That includes inviting them to the Technorama Facebook page. And that's give right. me a binary high five.
101.
Click, like, click, like, click, like.
Plus.